What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. This is the Week 13 Sunday recap. Man, oh man, do we love doing a super fringe breakdown of everything that happened in the week that was in the NFL. We're trying to make it faster this week. We'll see how it goes. A reminder, if you like it, leave a review. If you love the show, like the show, new to the show, whatever, you know, whatever it is, you dig it, leave a review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. We appreciate it. We crashed through a threshold, burst through a threshold, I guess. We're looking to keep the momentum going as we head towards the playoffs. Tons of great shows. The more reviews we get, the easier it is to convince our bosses to let us do what we want, and not fire us. So that's great too. So leave a review, 5-star rating, hit that button, and keep writing funny reviews because, frankly, they're hilarious. You guys are funnier than we are. Certainly funnier than Mr. Sad Sack, Ryan Wilson, who is feeling is wearing his dangerous shirt that our buddy Lewis made for us, podcast listener, wearing his Baker Mayfield shirt on a day that Baker Mayfield lost to the Steelers. We'll get to that. Sean Wagner McGuff, what's going on, buddy?
What's up, Brinson?
And John Breach. Howdy, John.
I ate 7 slices of pumpkin pie today. I'm ashamed of myself.
You know what? I ate an entire calzone for dinner.
I feel better. Thanks, Brinson. 7 slices? How many slices are in a normal pie? That's none of your business how I cut my pie. I'm not going to tell you. Isn't that just like 3/4 of a pie? Or
I think there's usually 8 slices in a pie.
I was going to say, it sounds like you ate a pie. But it's over the course of a day. Our day starts at like 9 a.m. It is now midnight. So that's less than 1 slice every 2 hours, I think, if my math. So it's not bad, guys. Trust me.
Did you eat anything else? Or was this like Thanksgiving leftover party time?
Oh, it was definitely Thanksgiving leftovers. I had a Chick-fil-A sandwich. I buy one every Saturday night to eat on Sunday while we work. So that was my day. It was pumpkin pie and Chick-fil-A.
Overnight Chick-fil-A sandwich?
Oh, it's delicious. The fried ones overnight?
Do you eat it up or do you eat it cold?
I heat it up. You think I eat a cold chicken sandwich?
Do you heat it up in the toaster oven or the microwave?
The microwave.
Would you take the pickles off before you heat it up?
I heat up the pickles too. It's all delicious. Don't knock it until you've tried it.
I've learned too much about Breach in these last 2 minutes.
Hey, we had a podcast listener DM me. It was like, very important question. I'm going, lives in Canada. He's coming down to the Vikings-Seahawks game tonight for Monday Night Football. And he was going to go to Chick-fil-A for the first time. So he asked me what he should get. What would you order at Chick-fil-A if you had to pick, if you're going for the first time? I told him, either get the number one combo, but be careful if you don't like pickles, make sure you get them off. Or I would go spicy chicken sandwich. I like the Chick-fil-A spices. That's what I would go with instead of the regular number one.
Definitely spicy chicken.
And then get the waffle fries. And you know what? Treat yourself and get a milkshake.
I told him a milkshake too. And you know what the real pro tip for Chick-fil-A is? You can ask for the waffle fries to be well done, and then they're way less soggy and much more crispy and much better. And the other pro tip for Chick-fil-A? You ask for the fat-free honey mustard salad dressing to dip your fries in. It's some of the best honey mustard out there.
And the other pro tip is that since it's December, there's peppermint stick milkshakes, which are delicious. So get one. This guy is going to gain more pounds than I gained today eating his pumpkin pie because he's going to get 7 things. Get the milkshake, the peppermint stick milkshake. Get Brinson's suggestions. Get buffalo sauce to dip your fries in. It's delicious.
All right. Let's get to some football. Not a delicious evening for Bill Belichick and Tom Brady in Houston. They lose to the Houston Texans 28-22, and what can only go down as a pretty shocking victory for Houston, considering that Bill O'Brien had never beaten Bill Belichick since he flew the Patriots' nest. And he got a big win here that really, I think, guys, throws the AFC playoff picture as a whole into a It's a maw. It's a fracas. It's a another word for crazy confusion. Would you agree or disagree, Sean, that this altered the way we're going to look at the AFC playoff picture?
Yeah, you actually. And I want to preface all this by saying everything I say, I'm not
saying. If you steal my Bills thing, I'll murder you. I'll kill you.
I would like to see you try, Brinson. You can't even mail something to me in 2 months. I would like to see you get here.
The Bills could win. The Bills could still win the AFC East. If the Bills win out and the Chiefs beat the Patriots next Sunday, the Bills would be the number one seed in the AFC. And after we watch them dismantle the Cowboys, it's not that far-fetched.
And so the other implications, obviously, suddenly the Ravens now are holding the top seed because they already beat the Patriots. So suddenly it's looking like it's not, can Lamar Jackson go into Foxborough with his trip to the Super Bowl on the line? It's, can the Patriots go into Baltimore and do it, which they already tried to do it once this season, did not go well. And also, let's not mention, the Patriots play the Chiefs next. So if the Chiefs beat the Patriots, something that could happen, and then the Patriots could, in theory, lose to the Bills, the Chiefs are suddenly played their way back into a chance to get a first-round bye when it looked like, for a long time, we were sticking them into that third seed. So, and we haven't even mentioned the Texans, the fact that they have the Titans hot on their heels, and no one expected them to be able to beat the Patriots. So this is a huge win for them because it's a win I don't think anyone expected them to get. And suddenly they're 8-4. You know, they're not one of those 7-6 or whatever 7-5 teams. I think they're legit, and this game proved that they could actually win a playoff game or two. And I think along for most of the season we've said, oh, Watson's great, but he's not going to be able to overcome Bill O'Brien. Bill O'Brien coached a hell of a game tonight. And that play call that he stuck it to the Patriots to kind of put the game on ice was an incredible play call. One you could argue maybe he should have saved actually for January.
Yeah.
Why save it for January if you beat the Patriots? That's huge.
That's just because they didn't need to do it.
That's
they were going to win.
I would they did need to do it. They won by 6 points.
They probably would have scored there anyways.
Well, I think they did it as a test because after the game, Bill O'Brien said that Hopkins and Duke Johnson drew up the play on a piece of paper over the bye week.
Oh, really?
And O'Brien was like, well, I guess if we can squeeze. So it was more of a risk-averse play where he probably wanted to try it while they were leading to see if it would work. And then if it did, be like, all right, guys, well, go drop some more plays and we'll throw them in the playbook. So those two literally drew up the play.
I think the risky part of the play, and by the way, if for those who didn't see it, what it was like a underneath reverse pitch.
It was a double hand. Watson handed the ball off once, and then Hopkins was coming back across the formation, and they handed it off to him. And then from there, he optioned it to Watson, but it was a forward pass, so it went down as a touchdown pass for Hopkins.
Correct, yeah. Hopkins got the ball, ran an option-style play, and then pitched it high. I would argue that two things. Look, it's a great play. I don't want to be the well actually guy and complained about the awesome play. But one, if you fumble the ball, the Patriots go the other way. It's going to get a little dicey and people are going to point to that play. And two, I don't know, maybe don't have your two best players on your football team, like just begging to take huge shots from defensive players late in the game when you're up by multiple scores.
I have no issue with that play call. I actually loved it. We crush Bob all the time, Bill O'Brien, about being too conservative and doing stupid stuff. It worked. Let the Texans fans enjoy it. I enjoyed it. I mean, we're talking about save the play for January. This team was 7-4 coming into this game. They were supposed to lose by 20 points. They won the football game. DeAndre Hopkins is your best player. Deshaun Watson is your second best player, vice versa. Have the ball in their hands. Literally, the two best players had the ball in their hands. They scored a touchdown.
Yeah.
Settle down.
Ryan isn't a bad mood.
He isn't.
Yeah, and I will say to Ryan's point, and you guys saying that they maybe didn't rate because of the score, they didn't need to run it. It was 21-9. If they don't get a touchdown in that series and they're forced to kick a field goal, it's 24-9, and you're still only up two possessions on the Patriots with 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, which isn't a comfortable lead. You would much rather be up three scores. So I'm on Team Ryan here. I like the call. I don't think you hold it till January. You win now, Sean, because there's no January if you don't win now.
It was. I don't want to get into this. It's a great play call. I'm just saying it was first and goal from the six.
Look, they took shots on the field. I thought they were smart about their offensive game plan. And frankly, it exposes what I think it's going to be really interesting with the Chiefs because what we saw is that Stephon Gilmore was all over DeAndre Hopkins and they've known each other since college because Gilmore played in South Carolina. Hopkins played at Clemson, you know, they're rivals like that. You could tell they didn't like each other. Gilmore held him mostly in check, 67 receiving yards at the end of the day. He did have the passing touchdown, to Watson. But you could tell that the Texans were more than content to take their vertical shots to Will Fuller and Kenny Stills and that they knew they could beat the secondary Patriots players. And I'll be very curious how New England operates defensively when it has to play a team with this many weapons, like the Chiefs, like the Ravens. You know what I mean? Like the Patriots defense is great, But what if you, like, if you have multiple ways of beating a team, multiple ways of beating somebody on offense, it feels like you can put up points on them.
And they have their very own James White and Duke Johnson. And Duke Johnson wore their ass out in the pass game. I know they stopped them running the ball, but who cares about that? I thought he was a nice weapon in the passing game, sort of mixed things up, gave him the underneath option, and did basically the same thing that Tom Brady and James White have been doing for years up until this year, pretty much. The only issue I had about the Texans, I thought they did everything perfectly except that very last defensive drive. It's like they thought the game was over, and they were just like – it was like a walkthrough. Like James White's running crazy through the field. Yeah. The Edelman touchdown, the leverage was wrong on the touchdown. It was a pretty easy throw.
Yeah.
Other than that, they played out of their minds.
It's like, hey, guys, you have 28 points in NRT Stadium against the Patriots. You may want to make sure you win this game because we saw them up
20. And the onside kick. I'm sure John was probably stripping out naked because he thought it was going to be another crazy onside recovery.
Lathering pumpkin pie on his bare chest.
Oh, pumpkin pie and onside kicks.
Oh, yeah.
That was why I saved a slice, was to either myself in case an onside kick got recovered. My God, it was close.
I want to point out real quickly that I thought that this game flipped very early. And it's, I think this is really telltale with the Patriots. The Patriots need to play from ahead right now, how they're constituted. They have to play from ahead. And they got a 3-and-out from the Texans early on. And then they marched down. I mean, it's immediate 3-and-out. They go 14 plays, 54 yards, or actually, excuse me, 69 yards, 15 with the penalty. Five first downs. They're running the ball like crazy. Sonny Michel looks good. I mean, it looks like this is what we saw from the Patriots at the end of the game last week. And then they have to settle for a field goal. They get another punt from the Texans. Then Tom Brady throws that interception. It was a bad interception. And, you know, it goes back the other way. And as soon as that happened, and then the Texans got 7, it's 7-3, and then they score again quickly. It's like, whoa, whoa. Like, it was a very shell-shocking moment. And the Patriots went punt, 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 punt after that, and then turnover on downs, and then they're in the fourth quarter, and they scored 3 touchdowns in the third quarter. I don't think those 3 touchdowns are indicative of their offense. I think their offense is a lot closer, Ryan, to what we saw in the middle of that game. And I would ask you, is Tom Brady washed up?
I think it's hard to differentiate Tom Brady from the rest of that doo-doo offense. Isaiah Wynn's back, and he I don't know if Brady was any more well-protected this game than he has been previously. The issue was along the right side with Jacob Martin, who we were making fun of a few weeks ago as being the other guy as part of the Clowney trade. He actually was getting after it on Sunday night. But, yeah, so the running game's fine if it works, but there's literally no one for him to throw the ball to. N'Keal Harry is back from the injury off IR. He went out of the game at the same time as Karras, the center, went out of the game, so he only played like half the game. So clearly something – they weren't happy with something he was doing. Tom Brady's obviously frustrated. But I don't know – so if Tom Brady is on the Chiefs, I guess he's playing better. I mean, I would like to think he would be playing better.
The ball's not coming out of his hand with the speed. It doesn't look accurate. Like
he doesn't know any of these guys. He doesn't have a lot of familiarity with these guys. He knows these guys clearly. But I guarantee you, if AB wasn't facing a possible suspension whenever he decides to come back, Tom Brady would be driving him back to Foxborough toot sweet, because that's what you needed on that last drive when they took him 2 minutes to get down the field, even though the Texans weren't playing. And they don't have that right now. By the way, did you see what the Texans wore to the game, the Texans players?
Yeah, SWAT gear. I didn't like that.
I made a note and wrote FFS.
For F's sake.
This is like the 2012 situation where they all wore the Letterman jackets after they started 11-1.
No, they wore Letterman jackets to New England on Monday night, and J.J. Watt was leading the charge.
Yeah, 42-14 or something. So I was like, oh, well, this is clearly what's going to happen here. These guys are going to be
bigger on the Patriots because of those SWAT gear, like the SWAT gear.
My thought at the time before the game was when I saw the SWAT gear, I said the only way they're going to beat the Patriots now is if they literally bring machine guns and start shooting people with the SWAT gear going along with it. Luckily, they didn't have to do any of that. Shout out to Last Boy Scout. But, nothing bad to take away from this game.
And apparently that's a thing they do because they were wearing Mortal Kombat costumes before their last game against the Colts. So they just, you know, like DeAndre Hopkins drawing up plays on his bye week, these guys just come up with costumes to wear. One thing, Ryan, you said about the Patriots offense is it's not even like Tom Brady definitely looks like maybe he's lost a little arm strength. He's not sure where to get the ball, but the Patriots receivers had trouble getting separation. We heard Brady looked like he complained about it. And what is he supposed to do with the ball if his receivers aren't open? And so he's not 30-year-old spry Tom Brady anymore. He can't just be running around trying to find something, wait till his guys get open. They've got to get open or he's going to get murdered. He's 42 years old. I don't care how pliable you are. If he keeps taking hits like he did against Houston, he's going to get hurt or he's going to get beat up and he's going to play worse because he's someone who doesn't play well once he starts getting banged up and once he starts getting rattled, which doesn't happen often, but it looked like he was starting to happen this game. And so what we see is the Patriots, his go-to is he just starts dumping the ball off to James White because he doesn't want to take a hit. And then obviously he'll try and be on the same page with Julian Edelman. And Ryan, I think you nailed the nail on the head with the whole Antonio Brown thing. Antonio Brown literally dropped a tweet in the middle of this game with Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You showing his five Patriots highlights, because I think that's all the highlights you can have when you only play in one game with a team. But they were all there on this tweet. So he is making it as clear as possible that he still wants to play for the Patriots. And I really think after a situation like this, and if this were to happen again next week against the Chiefs, I think we might see Belichick go to Robert Kraft and be like, look, we're not going to win Super Bowl unless you call Roger Goodell and tell him to reinstate AB, and then AB comes to Foxborough. I mean, this is – they're getting to desperation mode.
No, we are getting to the point where it's like Bob Kraft is going to have to apologize to AB.
real quick, to put into perspective how bad Brady was in this game until – I don't want to call it garbage time because they actually came close to recovering an onside kick to go tie the game. But midway through the third quarter, this game looked completely over. Brady was 9 of 25 – for 90 yards in an interception. He was averaging 3.6 yards per attempt.
Sean, at that point in time, when he was 9 of 25, he had more rushing yards than completions.
And it's one of those things where we're so cautious because we've seen it over the years so many times of him having a bad game or two, calling him washed, and then he comes back and wins the Super Bowl. So it seems like if any other 38, like not even 42, if any other 36-year-old quarterback was having this kind of mediocre season, yeah, we would be calling him washed, like we're doing with Matt Ryan and like we're doing with Philip Rivers. And with Brady, we're asking the question, but we're so hesitant to ask it. But if you were to just strip away the name, present his stat line, or like if he could just be a blank figure and watch his film, a lot of people would be calling this guy washed, I think.
Even the 44-yard pass to Julian Edelman that set up, like, I think the first Patriots touchdown.
Wide open.
He was wide open and Brady like didn't make that great a throw. Like it was like a little floater that was wobbly. It just didn't have the same crispness to it. I don't know. And by the way,
can I ask Breach a question? Cause Breach is a resident conspiracy theorist. Knowing what we've seen from Tom Brady the last month and a half, John, and knowing that
you think he's
his house has been sold, Alex Guerrero's house has been sold, who's going to be the quarterback in New England in 2020?
Tom Brady.
Oh,
you know what? During that game, actually, I was like, wait a minute, you know, Tom Brady before it was like Tom Brady's not under contract. He could go wherever he wants. What if he wants to go to LA? What if Bill Belichick's like, see ya, dude? I mean, like, what if he's like, we're not signing you, Tom. You are in fact washed and we need a new quarterback and I'm going to go get somebody who's not washed like Philip Rivers.
Jeez, that's your fantasy, isn't it?
That is Brent's fantasy. He's been picturing this since like 5 years ago. He's like, how can Rivers get to New England? Good long game, Brinson.
It's going to be Dalton. Breach.
Stop it.
I'm just trying to pit you guys against each other.
FYI, the Ravens went, according to Sportsline data from Stephen O, went from the projected number 2 seed to the number 1 seed, and their Super Bowl chances 26.5 to 30% as a result of that, what the outcomes of today's games. The Ravens won, obviously. We'll get to that in a second. And the Patriots went from 21.9% to win the Super Bowl down to 18%. The Texans went from a 61% chance to win the division up to 81% chance. 61% to win the division, 81% chance to make the playoffs, went up to 72% to win the division, 94% to make the playoffs. Worth noting, the Texans play the Titans twice. The Colts lost to the Titans. We'll get to that in a second. And the Jaguars are crap. So it's looking like those two Titans games, if they can sweep the Titans, they have the Bucks and the Broncos as well. I mean, they can make a little bit of a run at a bye here too. I think it's probably unlikely, but there is chaos in here. The Ravens hold the tiebreaker over the Patriots. The Chiefs hold the tiebreaker over the Ravens. The Texans hold the tiebreaker over the Chiefs and the Patriots. And the Patriots hold the tiebreaker over who am I missing? Anyway, whatever. Maybe the Patriots.
Well, the Chiefs Patriots tiebreaker will be decided next week, obviously.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, we'll get to the Bills in a second. But if the Bills went out and the Patriots lose to the Chiefs, the Bills will be the number one seed in the AFC. That would be mine. If the Bills in the division too, insane. Let's talk about those Ravens. Oh, actually, one more point on the Texans. It's kind of fascinating that they have three former number one picks at cornerback. Vernon Hargraves, Bradley Roby, and Kerryon Conley. And they're all playing pretty well. Like, they've come in and made a pretty big impact. Like, they got
Jonathan Joseph, too. What do you mean guys they brought in?
Yeah, they brought him in free agency, like, way back, like, 2013.
20 years ago, yeah. But, yeah.
They brought in Conley, Hargrave. They traded for Conley. They got Hargraves off the wire. And then Roby was a free agent this offseason, right? And, I mean, look, they're talented guys. They went in the first round. They're playing well. So, good for them. Ravens beat the 49ers 20-17 last second. So this is why Breach ate all this pie. He's just smearing himself with pies like Justin Tucker's banging him a game. Justin Tucker. Yeah. Justin Tucker had a game.
Justin Tucker on one screen and American Pie the movie on the other.
Oh, God. The 49ers covered the 5.5. The under of 45.5 hit. Lamar Jackson, 24 fantasy points in this game. Did this game live up to the hype for you, Sean?
Yes, and my takeaway isn't, oh my God, the Ravens are so good because we already knew that. It's that I think these are the two best teams in football in my mind, because I don't look at this for the 49ers as a negative. I mean, obviously it's a loss and it hurts their positioning in the NFC, but they were right there with the Ravens, who we have been talking about for weeks as the most all-around team in football. And this game came down to the last two drives for each team, and the 49ers were down three. They had the ball at the Ravens' 35 yard line, and they had a 4th-and-1. And this is where people are going to get nitpicky and criticize Kyle Shanahan, who otherwise does a tremendous job, obviously, with the 49ers and getting the most out of that offense. He called a passing play on 4th-and-1. The pass was batted down the line of scrimmage. They had been running the ball like crazy off the edge against the Ravens, and that's why people are going to second guess the play call. They averaged 6 yards per carry. They ran the ball 29 times for 174 yards, so I understand the second guessing. And then Lamar comes down and leads the game-winning drive, and kind of surprising to see John Harbaugh settle for the 49-yard field goal instead of trying to get more yards in those conditions. But when you have Justin Tucker, I guess it doesn't really matter because that was as automatic as a kick gets. And Lamar wasn't that impressive in that game in terms of what he's been doing. But I think that's kind of scary because this was like game manager. Here's that phrase again that I was overusing a few weeks ago. Game manager Lamar. Like, he wasn't hitting on the big passing plays, but he was making safe passes, wasn't turning the ball over, and he did so much damage on the ground that I don't really know how you beat this Ravens team. But the flip side is that the 49ers went into Baltimore and could have won this game against the best team in football. And I think they've done in the past few weeks, even like they've lost to the Seahawks and lost to the Ravens, two really good teams, they've legitimized themselves in the process. So the way that they've lost those games.
Well, yeah, in Lamar's defense, I mean,
he was good.
49ers defense is really good, and that the conditions were disastrous.
Yeah. No, I'm not. That wasn't a negative. I'm saying that he was good for what the game called for, I thought.
Sure. Go ahead, Ryan. What were you saying?
Oh, I agree with mostly what Sean said. I don't think I was that down on the 49ers the last few weeks. I thought Jimmy G had started answering some questions. I thought he was fine. He had the one fumble, but again, the conditions weren't great. It is funny. Every time the 49ers go to the D.C. area, it's a monsoon. They played the Redskins whenever that was, and that the weather there was terrible, equally as bad against Baltimore. But I thought that the Deebo Samuel touchdown catch over Marcus Peters on 4th-and-2 was absolutely awesome. And I was actually looking to see the rookie wide receivers, the pass catch totals through whatever, 11, 12, 13 weeks, because I was checking on your guy Kelvin Harmon, Brenson. He has 13. No, he actually has 19 catches now. I mentioned that because Debo's number one. He has 40. He's been an awesome addition to that offense. Manny Sanders has been hurt a little bit, but he's certainly there too. But I think Debo, more than anyone else, has been sort of important for what Shanahan wants to do down the field. And I thought he played really well in that game. And I was impressed with what he did. Mark Andrews, the tight end, had that awesome catch on the seam route on their first touchdown, I believe. And he continues to be an important thing. And I thought, interestingly, after he scored, he did the Nick Bosa flag planting touchdown celebration. So I don't know who that's going to come back on last. I guess it came back on Nick Bosa this time, but who knows if it'll blow up in Mark Andrews' face at some point.
That's going to be a last team standing. Whoever's in the Super Bowl that either went to Ohio State or Oklahoma, that's who's going to be playing the flag last. One thing I will say, though, is that, Sean, I don't know I necessarily agree with you that Shanahan made a bad call, because if you look at his mindset, they had a 4th-and-2 earlier in the game that Ryan just mentioned where they did throw the ball and they got a touchdown to Deebo Samuel. Then we had a 4th-and-1 later in the game where they also threw a pass and also converted. So now you're at 2 for 2 throwing the ball twice. And so now you get to the 3rd one, and the Ravens are going to be totally off their game because they have no idea what's coming. They might be expecting the run, but they're like, oh, my God, we've already been burnt on a pass twice on 4th and short. They might throw it again, but they might run it. We have no – so it really was a way of keeping the Ravens off kilter. So I don't think that that was a horrible call by Shanahan, especially since it already worked twice. If anything, I would hold it against Harbaugh more for not trying to get closer. I don't care if Justin Tucker's your kicker. When you're playing in a monsoon, anything over 40 yards is not a gimme. Robbie Gould fell 5 yards short. Robbie Gould is one of the best kickers in the NFL over the past 3 years. He fell 5 yards short on a 51-yard field goal. So there's no telling that you're automatically going to make a kick from 49 yards. I thought that was actually a worse coaching job, just that end part right there, than what Shanahan did it. And I thought Harbaugh should have played for 5 or 10 more yards, especially since they had 36 seconds and one timeout.
They kicked on 3rd down and they ran their 2nd down play with 36 seconds left. Like, they clearly, it was really bizarre because Harbaugh this year has been so aggressive on 4th downs and just with this mentality. And like, you would trust Lamar not to make a dumb mistake, not to take a sack, not to turn it over, or, you know, your offensive line is maybe the best offensive line in football, especially with run blocking. Trust them not to get a holding penalty. So that was, I agree completely. That was really bizarre. And he's lucky he has Justin Tucker to bail him out of those situations.
Lamar Jackson's 101 rushing yards, gives him 4 games this season with 100 plus rushing yards. The most ever by a quarterback in a single season. Michael Vick had 3 twice in 2004 and 2006, and Russell Wilson had 3 in 2014. The Ravens also have rushed now for 2,494 yards this season, the 3rd most rushing yards by a team in the first 12 games of a season since 1970. Only the 72 Dolphins and the 75 Buffalo Bills had more. So this team's pretty good. And I really think, I think the Ravens would be kind of a heavy Super Bowl favorite at this point. Like, they can do everything. And I know people question Lamar Jackson in the playoffs. That's stupid. Trolls on Twitter.
Joe Flacco?
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. Dude, less than a year ago, he got booed in a playoff game in Baltimore. Okay.
People were talking about putting in Flacco at halftime in that game. I was just thinking about that.
Think about it.
I think if I'm the Ravens, though, my one concern is, look, they're 0-2 against the Chiefs. The Chiefs are going to be in the playoffs. Lamar Jackson hasn't proven he can beat them, and it's almost a certainty that they're going to face each other. I can't see Kansas City losing in the wild card round. I don't think they're going to get a bye at this point. And then, boom, you go from the wild card. You might have to face the Chiefs in the divisional round, and if you lose that, you know, you don't even get to the title game after the spectacular season by Lamar Jackson. So although I agree with you that the Ravens probably should be viewed as the favorite, I mean, you'd say the Chiefs are kind of their kryptonite right now, and so that is the one team that I would probably pick to beat the Ravens if they played head-to-head, even though I think the Ravens are probably the best team in the AFC.
Lamar Jackson doesn't play defense, number one, and the Ravens' defense is playing a lot better over the last 3 or 4 or 5 weeks than it has at any point in the last year and a half. So,
17 points per game, I think, in the winning streak, which is 8
games. I think if that game is in Kansas City, it's what, Chiefs -3 maybe? But what's the line if it's in Baltimore?
You make the Ravens a dog in the playoffs, I am going to take the Ravens.
But, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah,
what's the
4.5?
In Baltimore?
No, it's not that high. I think it's probably – I think Ryan's on it. It's probably 3 per pop because that's just home field advantage. The Chiefs defense, by the way, is playing really well lately too. So
they're getting better. Their run defense is terrible, but their pass defense is really good.
Yeah, I mean, just looking back on that game, I mean, Lamar 22-43, 267, no passing touchdowns. Only ran 8 times, 46 yards and a touchdown. So, interesting. Kyle Shanahan said afterwards, we had every chance to win that game. Came up a little bit short at the end. Credit them. Hopefully we can earn an opportunity to maybe get a chance to play them some other time again. I think we
know.
If you had to pick right now, Breach, would 49ers Ravens be your Super Bowl matchup?
Would not.
No, not the one you think will happen. Like, what your preferred matchup? Sorry.
Wait, my preferred or what I think is going to happen?
Like, you get to pick. You get a preferred.
Preferred. Chiefs-Vikings was my prediction before the season. I still kind of like that because I still think the Chiefs have the most potential to beat the Ravens, and I think the Chiefs can beat any other team that would be in the AFC playoff field, and probably the 49ers in the NFC, even though I'd like my Vikings prediction to stick, as I'm sure you would, Brenton. So I'll say Chiefs 49ers right now.
Well, for pure entertainment purposes, I don't care about your own personal gain. I care about, like, what do you think would be the most entertaining game, Ryan?
I'm with you. Baltimore, San Francisco. I love how Breach asks what you were asking for, then he said the opposite.
Cowboys, Ravens would be the most entertaining.
No, it wouldn't.
Are you kidding me? Dak, Ezekiel Elliott versus Lamar?
Yeah, one team punting on fourth and one, the other team going for every
fourth and one. If I was
going
to be like 50-35, it would be an insane Super Bowl.
Harbaugh would kick off to Jason Garrett. Jason Garrett would punt on first down.
It was Cowboys, Ravens would be entertaining in that we could go to the bar at halftime.
That game would be good.
Slaughter them. You go, Sean.
Chiefs, Seahawks. I'd like to watch Mahomes and Russ go head-to-head. High-scoring game.
Saints, I don't really want to.
Are the Saints that fun? They don't really throw the ball downfield.
Sean Payton once did an onside kick to open up the second half.
That was 10 years ago, Brinson. Quit living in the past.
I was in high school at my friend's house watching that game. My friend's mom made us cookies. That's how young I was. God.
Did you find $20 at any point?
No.
Moving along. Steelers, Browns. Steelers take down the Browns. Baker Mayfield not feeling so dangerous now, is he, Ryan? 20-13. Steelers plus cover the plus 1.5 as home dogs. The under hits, as it should always in Steelers and Browns games. James Washington caught another touchdown pass. He's actually becoming like kind of a reliable 49. What am I talking about? Reliable fantasy option. But the real story, and multiple Steeler players talked about this afterwards. Like, I think David DeCastro mentioned that it motivated the team. Freddie Kitchens spotted over the weekend wearing a T-shirt out of the movies that said Pittsburgh started it.
Do you know what movie he went to see where he wore that shirt?
I'm setting up my ability to play audio, but I don't know.
I know what you're doing. I want to give you the heads up. It was a movie about Mr. Rogers. Do you know where Mr. Rogers is from?
Pittsburgh.
So, double whammy.
Ooh, wait. He wore that shirt to see a movie about a Pittsburgh guy, meaning you might have Pittsburgh, like, folks there? Questionable.
Hey, look, the guy's not a Mensa member. Let's start there.
Freddie was asked about the shirt afterwards and gave an answer that, well, you know.
I mean, listen, the T-shirt didn't have anything to do with us at the minus one moving out. I wore a T-shirt. I wore a jacket with it. My daughters wanted me to wear the shirt, and I'd wear it again. I'd put a jacket on. I covered it up. I took a picture with a fan. That was as simple as that, you know. T-shirt didn't cause us to give up 40-yard passes, and we were ready to play. That's the only thing people need to be concerned about. We were ready to play.
I love how he trails off. He's like, hey, they didn't cause us to give a 40-yard pass. It's like, okay, Freddie, you're in a bad spot here, pal. Like, you had to win this game if you're the Browns. They are now 5-7. They are safe to say that they're not going to make a playoff push. Does it feel fair?
I mean, I think the Titans are their biggest competitor. The Steelers are who they are, but the Titans, I think, maybe has the best chance.
For the last spot?
I feel like they do. It ain't going to be the Raiders.
No, I'm saying, like, the Browns are – I think it's the Titans or the Steelers.
Yeah. No, what I'm saying is I think the Browns are done because I don't think they're going to leapfrog the Titans under any scenario.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The Titans, again, do have to play the Texans twice. The Browns do get the – like, the Browns are probably going to end up at 8-8.
And I'm going to predict this, and John may or may not agree, but I think Andy Dalton will beat them at least once.
Ooh.
I do agree. I was actually trying to break down. I thought Brinson might ask us later who would get that six slot like he did last week. And just the Browns, Freddie Kitchens in the interview said he'd be prepared.
John thinks the Bengals are going to get the six spot.
They're eliminated, Brinson. I already did the math. But they'll get the six spot next year.
Speaking of math, the Browns now have a 2.3 playoff percent chance of making the playoffs, according to Sportsline. I will be handling the post in which I break down the Browns playoff scenario breach, so please don't bother trying to claim it or do it.
Can I point out something? Jeremy Fowler of ESPN, who now covers the NFL, he used to cover the Browns and the Steelers, incidentally.
Our old colleague.
Way back in the day. He tweeted on Sunday afternoon after the game that the Browns didn't expect this to be like an 11-win season. They knew this was part of the building process, and the implication was there's a chance old Freddie Outhouse might come back, which would only delay any success this team might have. So I don't know under what pretense you would bring Freddie Kitchens back, because he is the only reason this team is as terrible as it is. I mean, you can talk about Myles Garrett swinging helmets and all that. The team won last week without Myles Garrett. They should have won. They could have won this week. I don't know if they should have won. They were up 10-0, and then everything went sideways.
Did you watch this game closely?
Every play.
Okay, what happened? Because they were up 10-0. I was sort of like, all right, I'm in a good spot with this Browns bet, I think.
The offense wasn't clicking, and that's in part due to the Steelers' defense being as good as it is. But here's what happened from the Steelers' perspective. They kept running the ball on the first few series with Duck Hodges, and finally when they were down 10-0, they said, okay, we got to open it up. And you just start throwing BBs all over the place to James Washington. I do think it's funny that James Washington has great rapport with Duck Hodges, even though he played the last 8 years with Mason Rudolph.
It's unbelievable. He like the, you know, the shower narrative. That's what they call it in fantasy. It's when you went to school with a guy, like, so, you know, you showered together or whatever. Yeah. Mason Rudolph and James Washington, like, I mean, how many catches did he have from Mason Rudolph in college? Like 400, and he just can't get on the same page with him at the pros. And then like Duck Hodges slides in, he's just catching everything. 4 catches, 111 yards and a touchdown for James Washington. Benny Snell, 16 carries, 63 yards and a touchdown. He is somebody I would look at for your fantasy playoff run because of his status with the Steelers. Who knows if he, you know, is actually.
By the way, can I point out, Mike Tomlin should secretly be in the running for coach of the year. This team was 0-3. They've won 7 of 9. And this team they put out there, this offensive squad, that is a practice squad unit other than the offensive line. Duck Hodges, James Conner's out, Marquise Pouncey's out. They had Deion Kane, who was cut by the Colts. They had Tevin Jones. Can anyone tell me where Tevin Jones went to college? I don't even know where he went to college.
Western Kentucky.
Is that true?
I have no idea.
I think so. I was going to say, good guess. You should have gone with it. Deontay Johnson, their third-round pick, was out there. James Washington, their second-round pick from a year ago. No Juju Smith-Schuster. They don't throw to the tight ends anymore. And it was all on the defense, and Duck Hodges made a few throws, and you know, the Browns bounced it up.
Memphis, by the way. I know the Steelers won, so I'm not trying to, like, dunk on Ryan the Steelers, but I did like that when they benched Mason Rudolph, Mike Tomlin's explanation was Hodges hasn't killed us. And then the Steelers are winning this game 20-13 midway through the fourth quarter. And on the first play of their drive that they're going to try to salt away the game, he throws this deep bomb overthrows it by 20 yards and it gets picked off. And I was like, Duck, that is literally the one thing that Mike Tomlin said you would not do. And you literally just did it. And they ended up surviving, but I found that humorous.
I agree. By the way, there were multiple players, as I mentioned, with the Steelers who, not to circle back to the Freddie Kitchens shirt, but it is hilarious. Ramon Foster was asked about it after the game as well.
I know our coach would have never done anything like that. Why throw gas? I know I said I want to answer, but when you do something like that, you throw your players in harm's way. He's not on the field. You throw your players in harm's way when you do stuff like that with a Vanderson. I hate that for them.
I am annoyed that Freddie Kitchens, like, this clearly motivated the Steelers.
Let me ask you this. Like, the shirt is sort of funny, and I don't care about it. But why would you wear it on Friday? Why not wear it on the plane right home today when you win?
It's one of those things. It's like the shoes, the Joker shoes and stuff. It's like, if you're winning, it's fine. It's entertaining. No one cares. But you can't do this when you're a 5-6 team that is already below expectations, because you know if you do lose the game, it's going to be turned into a talking point. So it's like, I agree with Freddie Kitchens. That's not the reason why they lost. But you have to be smart enough to understand that if you do this and you lose, it's going to turn into the main narrative. And it seems like this entire year, that's what the Browns just don't have, like, any awareness of their perception. And maybe that doesn't matter in terms of football, but it matters in the way we talk about them. And they can't expect to do this kind of stuff, play sloppy football, and get outplayed by teams that they have more talent than, and then not to talk about it.
By the way, you know who the model citizen is for how to pull this thing off? My boy, Matt Patricia. After the Super Bowl, he wears the Roger Goodell clown shirt. After they won, prancing off down the steps of the airplane, and everyone had a good laugh except Roger Goodell. Except now that AB's been suspended, Bob Kraft can't make that phone call and ask Roger Goodell to reinstate AB without any issue. But that's how you do it. You win the Super Bowl, then you can make fun of whoever you want to make fun of.
Right. You don't show up to, like, media day in a Roger Goodell clown shirt like before the Super Bowl. Yeah, exactly. No, I'm with you. I mean, it is it's just the definition of the Browns being sloppy. It's what they do. They screw things up all the time. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will run through a bunch of other football games.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's the butterfly effect for real.
The Kansas City Chiefs annihilated the Oakland Raiders 40-9. The Chiefs easily covered the 10, 11, 12, 14, 15, 16, whatever you want to say it was, spread. The over pushed. It opened at, I think it closed at 49, opened at 50. So you could have gotten it at 50, and you would have hit the under. A bunch of late garbage points got it to a push too. The Chiefs actually blocked an extra point and returned it to the house to get 2 points. To make it an even 49. The Raiders, for some reason, weren't taking knees, even though they were down 38-3. Like, he should just run the ball and get out of there. Gruden's throwing the end zone. They score a touchdown. Mahomes has a okay day. 15 of 29 for 175 yards, one touchdown. He also rushed a touchdown in there. Second career game with a pass TD and a rush TD. Also his second straight game with fewer than 200 yards passing. It's almost like he's statistically regressing. Those are his only two games in his career where he's under 200 passing yards. Andy Reid off the bye. Andy Reid off the bye. Andy Reid covers off the bye. 18-3 straight up. Pretty good. And the Chiefs, I think, Breach, have sufficiently salted away the division now.
Yeah, I feel like this was the most predictable game of the entire season. We literally talked all week about there was a 100% chance that Andy Reid was going to win off the bye and that Derek Carr was going to completely choke in this game. He looked horrible the last time these two teams played earlier in the season, and there was no reason to think he was going to play any better. I also love that Jack Del Rio called him out earlier this week and said he hates playing in cold weather. Then he has to come out and play a cold weather game, and what happens? He falls flat on his face. I mean, how did the Chiefs win with Patrick Mahomes only throwing for 175 yards? Because Derek Carr played like Derek Carr. You put the win in charge of him. He has to keep up with the Chiefs. It's just not going to happen. He threw a pick six. He threw two interceptions in this game. They were both ugly interceptions. And this is just the reality the Raiders are facing. I mean, if I'm John Gruden, I'm calling my real estate agent and making sure that Derek Carr isn't living next to me in Las Vegas so that it's not awkward whenever I decide to get rid of him in the next year or two. Because I think if there's anything we've learned about the Raiders in the past few weeks, I mean, look, they've scored 12 points in the past 2 weeks against the Jets and the Chiefs. That's 6 points per game. I know you hate math, Wilson. So I just don't see how anyone thinks that the Raiders are out of the playoff race. That's it. We can.
Well,
the Raiders suck. The Raiders suck,
there is
man.
No way they're getting in the playoffs.
They're terrible.
Clip it.
They lost games, consecutive games by 30 plus points for the first time since 1961. Derek Carr, 20 of 30 for 222 yards, one touchdown, two interceptions. Somehow, 7.4 yards. I don't know how this guy does it. It's unbelievable. He doesn't throw one ball down the field. He finishes 7.4 yards per attempt. It's incredible. He's a magician. He's a YPA magician. The Raiders have just over 9% chance to make the playoffs, according to Sportsline. Josh Jacobs ran 17 times for 104 yards. I don't know if you guys listen to this whole game. Romo and Nance were calling it. And like, Nance is being like hilarious in this game. He kept like, so Josh Jacobs crossed over 100 yards and then he got like tackled for a loss. And so he's like, well, there he loses this game. And then like Jacobs like went back and forth several times, and Nance just kept making a joke about it. It was I found it very amusing.
Late in the game, it was a 4-score game, and the Raiders were going for a fourth down near midfield, and Tony Romo goes, "Well, I think they got to pick this up to stay in the game." And then right before the snap, Nance yells, "This is for the ball game!" And like, and then they kick a field goal at the end of the drive, and Romo goes, "And now it's only a 4-score game." And Nance points out, "Well, it was a 4-score game before, Tony."
Yeah.
They were so sarcastic in the entire second half of this game.
He told him, he's like, "Come on, Jim, give us your best call." And he's like, "Here it is. This is for everything." It's like they're clowns. Look, we're not going to pile on the Raiders because they lost. They lost. They lost to a good football team. It happens. But yeah, yes.
Just want to point out that they're 6-6. All six of their wins have come by one score. They now have a negative 87 point differential, which I think is like the fourth or fifth worst in football.
Yikes.
They are aggressively not good.
Also worth noting, before the 34-3 blowout last week at the hands of the Jets, Breach and I will attest, they should have lost to the Bengals the week before that at home. They won 17-10 against Ryan Finley. This team is not going to the playoffs.
So their final four games, worth noting, because the over-under win total for the Raiders, whoever's – I think it's Sean's earpiece that keeps making that noise. If you want to blame him, folks, listen. They get the Titans at home this coming week. Probably a loss. I think that's a very bad matchup for them. Then they get the Jaguars at home in week 15. That's the final home game in Oakland history before they move to Vegas, we think. So they should beat Jacksonville there. That place will be rowdy. I think it'll be emotional. Jacksonville's given up on the season. Then they're at the Chargers and at Denver. So there's a chance they could lose out and hit the under win total. But I think they will probably get to 7, maybe 8 wins, which is not a bad step forward in John Gruden's second year. But, you know, it's disappointing to be where they were, even if it was all smoke and mirrors and not make a playoff run. Sean, would you like to defend your little precious prince, Patrick Mahomes?
No, I mean, it's kind of funny because I'm probably, at least on this podcast, I'm the biggest Patrick Mahomes homer, and probably at CBS Sports, and I would say in general on Twitter. And I tweeted out his stats the last two games, which is by far his worst stretch with the Chiefs, 59% of his passes completed, 5.7 yards per attempt against the Chargers and Raiders, two defenses that aren't exactly good. So he's not been good the last 2 weeks. I tweeted that out, and all these Chiefs fans are coming to my mentions talking about how I'm creating a false narrative, and it must be terrible for all these good players to like have these national media guys creating these false things without using real stats. It's like, dude, like I got in hot water for saying he outplayed Brady in the AFC Championship game. Like, I'm not the dude to come after. But you watched how the Texans took apart the Patriots on Sunday night, and I think – even though it's the Patriots defense, and I don't know if they're still going to be ranked first after their performance against Houston, I think there's a good chance he's going to rebound. I think there's openings they can create with their speed offensively and get the ball out quick against those linebackers. So I'm not panicking about it, but it's weird because he's looked the most healthy he's looked since he suffered that ankle injury back in week one, to be frank. And his accuracy and the efficiency in this Chiefs offense has completely disappeared the last 2 weeks.
I'm trying to read these tweets from Chiefs fans.
Would you like me to find some or just keep going?
I don't.
I agree.
Yeah, I don't care either. Moving along. fewest games to 70 career passing touchdowns. Mahomes 27. Titans 31. Colts 17. The Tennessee Titans covered the game. They were 1-point favorites at close. A lot of people like the Colts in that spot. The over hits in another Titans game, which is surprising because you don't think of them as like explosively offensive. Derrick Henry, 19 fantasy points, had another 100-yard game. Worth monitoring because, as you recall, last week I told you that when teams play Derrick Henry and he goes off for 100 yards, the next week they're now 1-6 straight up. So keep in mind that with Indianapolis. Huge widespread impact, by the way, on the playoff race. And Derrick Henry, his last three games, 22.7 carries per game, 165.3 yards per game, 5 rushing touchdowns. This is exactly what he did last year. He gets going late in the season. And when he's running well, Ryan, this Titans team is pretty dangerous. Ryan Tannehill playing really well, too.
Yeah, our guy JLC wrote about this, and you actually said it last podcast, and we sort of laughed at you, that Tannehill might be a perspective franchise tag guy, given how well he's played, and that's sort of bonkers. On the other side, the Colts, Jacoby Brissett was 25-40, but he had two interceptions. One was a pick six, I believe. Is that right?
two horrific interceptions.
And that got me to thinking. And then John can speak to the issues with the kicker that I have to talk about every week about who's available. Cody Parkey, I suppose. But 2-year deal for Jacoby Brissett before the season. He'll be signed through 2020. I'm seriously thinking from the Colts, I might be looking for a quarterback this offseason, at least someone to sit behind Jacoby Brissett. And Sean's gesticulating because he was basically saying this last week. We made fun of him. He actually's onto something. I hate to admit it. But I don't know if Jacoby Brissett's a long-term answer. And this is a terrible day in the annals of NC State quarterbacks as NFL quarterbacks.
Come on.
Like, you hate to see it.
You hate to see it.
Did we go? Did we get swept this week? Is that what happened? State quarterbacks. Finley got
Russ.
Russell on Monday night. Rivers loses incredible fashion. Brissett has a horrible day. State lost to Carolina. So, I think if I'm doing the math correctly, over the last 10 days or 11 days now, 12 days, whatever it is, NC State quarterbacks are like 0-12. They're off 2 weeks.
At least Mike Glennon got in the game against the Jets.
Yeah. Look, it's fair to ask questions about Brissett. He didn't play very well. Their offensive line is still really good. That's the biggest strength of that team. You can see it. They should have won that game, by the way. Like, the Colts should have won that game. Everyone agrees with that, right?
I do not.
Okay. Why?
Well, I mean, they had the pick six. They had the interception, the touchdown off the block kick.
So you take those two away, it's 17-17. It's anyone's game. I wouldn't say the Colts should have won. I felt like it was pretty even.
Adam Vinatieri is kicking a field goal from 46 yards in a tie game to go up 20-17, and they block it to the house.
Right, and if they don't block it, it's Vinatieri this year, so he probably misses it. And then the Titans take over at the 36-yard line in a tie game, give the ball to Derrick Henry 10 times, drive down, kick a field goal, win.
And if he does make it, the Titans are only down 3, and they have 5 minutes left to go tie the game or win the game.
I mean, the Colts are up 17-7 in the third quarter. They should have put away the Titans in this game. Is what I'm saying. They had multiple opportunities to win it, and if you win that game, you know, you go from being this team that's 6-6 and behind the Raiders and behind the, because you lost the Raiders at home for that wild card spot. You're just one game out from behind Pittsburgh. But you know, you're now 2 games out of the division. You're basically toast in terms of trying to chase down the Texans. The Colts have Tampa Bay on the road. They have 3 of their 4 remaining games on the road, and they've quietly lost 4 or 5 games. I just don't know that I would put it all on Brissett. I just thought that Marlon Mack's out, T.Y. Hilton's out. I mean, they don't have a lot of weapons. Zach Pascal, Jack Doyle.
His knee's still hurt too, but he's the quarterback. That's where the buck stops.
You know what I don't like about the Colts offense, and I don't know if it's – I don't want to assign all the blame to Brissett. I think probably Frank Reich probably deserves a little bit of blame, and I like Frank Reich, but they don't throw the ball downfield. And it's – I said this a couple weeks ago whenever they lost that primetime game. Like, I don't want to watch this team because they are so uninteresting to me. And, yes, a part of it is T.Y. Hilton's not there. And if you look at T.Y., their record without T.Y. Hilton over the last couple years when he's not there, it's really bad.
They've won once.
Okay. How many times have they lost? A lot,
I think it's
right?
Like 1-8.
Right. And so the
on attempt 20 yards or more down the field, and it was intercepted.
And the other thing I want to say when I was waving at Ryan and he was talking about Brissett might not be the answer, back in August when they gave Brissett that extension, I did not like that idea. And I know it was like, oh, we want to show this guy we're behind him. You had him under contract for 1 year. Let him prove that he's worthy of starting and being your franchise quarterback and then reward him after the season. And now
it's a cheap deal. And I mean,
I'm just saying that like it seemed like they were sold on him. And it seems like at the beginning of the year, we were also sold on him. And I was praising him along with everyone else. But I do think this team should go into the offseason trying to locate an upgrade. And you can still keep Brissett around. But I think they got to give themselves another option at quarterback.
What about at kicker? Because we keep saying this game was mostly Brissett's fault, but you have to put it on their special teams. The Colts have somehow lost 4 games this season, mostly because of their kicker or because of their field goal team. And this was one of those things where everything that's happened this season kind of added up. Vinatieri missed 3 field goals in this game, missed a 55-yarder wide right, not a big deal. A lot of kickers missed that kick except for Justin Tucker. But the other thing is he also had a 53-yarder that was partially blocked, and that was because he kicked it low. And so some kickers do that, especially your older You take some trajectory off the ball to make it go further. That's what Vinatieri was doing. And so you have teams going in there and flying in there and trying to block it because his kicks are low from further back. And then, boom, you're trying to 46-yard end the game. And that's basically what happened. The Titans knew that he's sending out blockable kicks. And I would think if you put the blocks on anyone, obviously the Colts line needs a block better. But it's on Vinatieri as much as anyone on that special teams unit. And so if you're the Colts, you literally, no matter how Jacoby Brissett has looked, he's looked good at times, he's looked bad at times, but if they had a competent field goal team, they would be, I mean, you could argue they would be 9-3 or 4 right now. How many games?
I wouldn't even blame Vinatieri or the special teams players. That's like blaming Ryan Finley for being terrible. We were all yelling at Zach Taylor about that. Why on God's earth would you keep bringing Vinatieri back week after week when you know exactly how it's going to end?
I do not know
because there's no better option.
Cody Parkey.
Clearly there has to be.
I also feel, I mean, look, I'm not trying to be a homer for Jacoby Brissett here, but I do think.
Homer.
Ryan mentioned the injury, but I mean, like, look, I mean, he's averaging like 5 yards per attempt since his knee injury. Like he had an MCL sprain. I think that's sort of just, he's an MCL sprain. His number one receiver's missing. His number one running back's missing.
Paris Campbell's missing too.
Paris Campbell's missing. Eric Ebron's on IR. I mean, like, everyone's gone. He's banged up. The defense isn't very good. I don't know. I think too much is being put on Brissett. I tweeted out that the Colts were 100% going to miss the playoffs because of the special teams. And somebody was like, what about Brissett and the defense? I was like, I didn't mean that he's Brissett to blame for it. I'm just saying they're like 100%. Like, they lost. They've lost multiple games because their special teams are bad. That's your fault.
But that's also indicative of the team because we've talked about it before. Every game they play seems to come down to one or two plays because they're playing all these tight games. And sure, the sign of good teams is that you can put away a few good teams. And outside of that Jacksonville game, they just haven't really put away anybody.
Do you think the Colts are dead in the playoffs?
Yeah.
I mean, they won game.
They've lost to the Steelers. They've lost to the Raiders.
But they're just one game back with 4 weeks to go. They're not like.
That's a lot of tiebreakers that hurt.
Yeah.
I agree with Ryan. I just like how mad he got at the question.
Salted that I would even ask it.
And the Colts are also 5-6 in the conference, which would be the final tiebreaker if it's a three-way tie or something. And that is right now hands down the worst among everybody in the top eight kind of fighting for that sixth spot.
All right. Colts are dead men walking.
Dead men walking, Brinson. Can I throw out one Derrick Henry fun fact real quick?
Okay.
With 149 yards today, he is just the fifth player in NFL history to rush for at least 145 yards and a touchdown in three straight games. The other four to do it were all Hall of Famers: Jim Brown, Eric Dickerson, O.J. Simpson, and Adrian Peterson.
That's a fun fact. The Dolphins beat the Eagles. Oh, no, Debo. The Dolphins covered the +10. Obviously, the over of 45 hit very easily. Ryan Fitzpatrick went nuts. I believe that Fitzpatrick... if you use Fitzpatrick in daily fantasy, and perhaps, I don't know, Sean, stacked it with Devontae Parker.
Rub it into Ryan, man. I'm kind of rooting for this because I find it funny.
My man, Devontae Parker goes bananas in this game. Our slack.
B-A-N-A-N-A-S, bananas.
Let's clip that. That's a new intro song, by the way, to the pod.
Parker, 7 catches on 10 targets, 159 yards. 2 touchdowns, and he said after, if it's coming to me, I'm getting it. That's my ball. That's how I feel. I feel like you guys owe me $100 a piece for this Parker Watkins bet. That's how happy I am about it.
Hey, you could say how well Watkins played, though.
I was going to say, did you say, don't look, Brinson. I'll give you a hint. Sammy Watkins was targeted 3 times. What do you think came of it?
0 yards.
Zeros across the board. That guy, he should be ashamed of himself. He's not even trying.
Oh my God, that's incredible. I wish I had like some better bet on like Devontae Parker having a big game. Like this is one of the all time great calls, and I'm just not going to get very much credit for it.
No, because you're 1 for 47 right now, and the one is Devontae Parker.
Parker's
46 are all the state quarterbacks that are now laying eggs.
Parker is 16th in the NFL in receiving yards now.
How is this happening? I don't understand.
See, I'm rooting for it at this point because Ryan is so
it's funny, but it's you have to admit, Sean, this is insane.
Hey, Jay Cutler called it 2 years ago when he said this guy's a faster version of Alshon Jeffrey. He actually looked like a better version of Alshon Jeffrey with the amount of catch, like the kind of catches he's making. He's not open. You know what I mean? Like, he's not gaining separation. He's just going out and outbodying these guys for it. He was also sitting on my bench.
Devontae Parker has 256 more receiving yards than Tyreek Hill.
And he doesn't have Patrick Mahomes throwing the ball.
Imagine if you had made that bet before the year that Parker would have more receiving yards than Tyreek Hill. Ryan would have given you on that.
Sammy Watkins, by the way, 538 receiving yards on the season.
I want those 11 rushing yards.
I'll give them to you now. Devontae Parker, 854 receiving yards. What's going to be awkward is when one of these guys gets hurt down the stretch and like the other side is like celebrating it. Like, Sean, I can see celebrating Devontae Parker injury. Like, ha-ha, we don't have to hear Brinson anymore. Breach, very important. What happened on the trick play? Did a punter throw it to a kicker?
That was a fantastic trick play. And you know what's funny is that, like, if any team should be looking for a trick play, hello, you ran a Philly special in the Super Bowl against the Patriots, and a team comes out in a formation that you see maybe once every 10 years in the NFL, you absolutely have to be ready for something crazy to happen. So you have the center and the holder/punter is lined up directly behind the center about 5 yards back. Then you have six guys who are about 15 yards out left and four more guys who are 15 yards out right. And it was total nonsense. The Eagles, the thing is, they actually played it well, except that Jason Sanders, the kicker, was lined out as a receiver far, 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 far left. And I guess they assumed the Dolphins aren't stupid enough to run a trick play with their holder throwing it to the kicker, because no one would ever do that. They probably thought it was going to be there's like three eligible guys that could get the pass on this play. And somehow Sanders just kind of skipped to the back of the end zone, was wide open. And this is my favorite special teams play of all time.
I'm gonna see.
Hey, can I ask?
Let me see if I get this. This is Christian Wilkins after the. You can't hear him, but he's pointing at the Eagles defenders and he's laughing hilariously.
When in the Eagles defense, when they were lining up for this play, I was like thinking, you better not snap this, because it looked it looked very similar to that Colts fake punt that we all remember. That's maybe the worst play in NFL history. And as soon as they snapped it, I was like, oh my God, no, no, no. And then suddenly it's like, oh my God, yes. And yeah. Like, if you look at the two plays synced up, it looks really similar, actually.
As you're reenacting Chuck Pagano's reaction to watching that play live, he goes, oh, that's how it's supposed to be done.
Here's the call of that, by the way.
The punter takes the snap, and then the toss to the end zone for the touchdown to the place kicker, Jason Sanders.
Come on. Oh, man.
I believe that is Kenny Albert and Rondi Barber, my second favorite Barber brother.
Interesting. Debo, you were at the game? Is that right?
Unfortunately.
I want to ask Debo. So the Eagles were up 10-0. I'm sure Debo probably felt good then. And then to start early in the third quarter, they were up 28-14. And I turned away, and when I turned back, it was like 28-34. So how did the third and fourth quarter, like, how did that unfold for you, like the slow death by 1,000 Ryan Fitzpatrick dump-offs?
Jeez, Ryan.
The Devontae Parker didn't help either.
See?
What a hellscape for Debo. He's like, Brinson probably yelling about Devontae.
I know.
Yeah, that's my worst nightmare.
Well, you felt good like at the start of the third quarter, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And they tried the onsides kick, didn't work out. You hold a 15-point lead against the Dolphins. You're going to win that game. You should win that game if you're a good team, and they're just not a good team right now. That was a miserable experience.
Debo, what went through your head when the Dolphins ran that crazy trick play?
Why not call a timeout? Sean makes a good point where the Colts play did not work, but it was the first half. Why not use a timeout and just collect yourselves? You had three. There's 4 minutes and 40 seconds left in the first half. Call a timeout.
I mean, the Dolphins scored four touchdowns. No, three. They scored 24 points in the second half. That is unbelievable.
Well, one of the worst parts is that the Cowboys laid an egg. So this was there for the taking. They were up by 14 in the second half against the friggin' Dolphins. And then, you know, the wheels fell off.
I was going to ask you, do you still think this comes down to the, is it week 16, Cowboys-Eagles, or are you off the Eagles train completely?
I should be, but it sadly still might come down to that. Like, I could see the Cowboys losing in the next 2 weeks, but the Eagles at this point could lose to the Redskins or Giants. That's not out of the realm of possibility at all.
Yeah. Was this a bad win for the Dolphins?
Yeah. They moved, actually, the win because the... Oh, they moved back to fourth, so they now have the fourth pick. The worst wins, and I've been saying this for a couple weeks now, the Steelers and the Texans.
Yeah.
Because now they have the 21st and 22nd picks, along with the fourth pick. Tua's hurt.
Steelers in the Steelers-Texans AFC Championship game is not ideal for the Dolphins.
No.
I mean, credit to Brian Flores, though. I mean, we're talking about sleeper coach of the year candidates. He's won three more games than we thought they had a chance of winning.
You're panicked if you took the Dolphins under, right? I think it was like 3.5 or 4.5.
But what about this, though? Wouldn't this team be better with Minkah Fitzpatrick and Laremy Tunsil right now?
Yeah, but you got to – yeah, but Minkah wasn't happy there.
Yeah, because they – I mean, they were misusing him. And winning fixes a lot of things.
Yeah.
I've been told.
Tunsil wanted the contract, and I just didn't – I don't think he's on the timing of their schedule.
Okay. I just don't know if they're going to be good next year because they've blown it up so much that there's not going
to
be –
They're blowing it up to get – they're tanking for Trevor.
Yeah, who's going to be their quarterback next year? Fitzpatrick one more year?
Yeah, got to bring him back.
And they're going to have Ryan Fitzpatrick killed and, like, bring in, like, Chad Henne so they can actually lose some games. They don't need Fitzpatrick messing around.
They had Josh Rosen sitting right there. They benched him.
We'll bring in Ryan Finley.
No. They don't care about winning games now. They want to lose other games next year.
They should trade for Ryan Finley and sign Phillip Rivers. That 0-16.
Or they could sign Andy Dalton. He hit the Bengals out to an 0-8 start this year.
Do you know what's crazy? Is that the Dolphins are 3-9, and they could conceivably win maybe the rest of their games. They play the Jets, the Giants, the Bengals, and then Week 17 against the Patriots. And if the Patriots only need to play for, they could win it. Like, they could go 7-9, and all that talk about tanking. And then Sean's coach of the year vote does go to Flores.
The Patriots are going to have plenty to play for in Week 17. I hate to break.
Reach thinks no one plays in Week 17 except the team he's talking about.
Let's move on. Oh, so yeah. Do you think the Cowboys right now to win the division?
Yeah.
Who are the Cowboys playing next week?
Bears.
The Bears.
And then the Rams.
Yeah.
What I won, and that's right.
51% chance of giving them to win the division.
The Eagles, though, have such an easy schedule.
They just lost to the Dolphins.
Well, yeah, is it easy? Yeah, but the Dolphins are a bulldozer. They're just running people over. They've won 3 of 5 games.
Oh, the Redskins have won 2 in a row.
If only the Dolphins didn't play this week, the Eagles would be sitting pretty.
Devo's prediction is Cowboys 66, Eagles 34.
Now that's sports line.
Those what?
That's sports line.
Oh, those are your playoff percentage chances.
I thought you were saying the score of their game when they play.
That's what the Week 16 score will be. Sorry.
I'll take the under.
Dolphins, this is the most points scored by a Dolphins team since 2015. And the Dolphins who scored, they scored 37, had 26 points in the first 4 weeks of the season.
Adam Gase never scored more than 37. I mean, this guy, this coach.
He never scored. Yeah, never scored more than 37. That's right.
Jets are on fire now, though.
Yeah. That was the first touchdown pass between a punter and a place kicker in either direction in the Super Bowl era, so that's exciting. And Sanders is the first place kicker to catch a touchdown since who, Breach?
Jim Turner.
Boom.
What year?
1977.
Boom! Savage.
Nice. You got reverse dunked on.
Like that?
Right. Devontae Parker has tied his career high for receiving touchdowns in a season. And I mentioned he has 895 receiving yards in the year.
That is preposterous to me. That's way more impressive than throwing 50 touchdowns in a season, rushing for 2,000 yards. The fact that he has 800 plus yards receiving.
He's going to double up Sammy Watkins.
Yeah, of course he is. Sammy's terrible.
Sammy Watkins is he's a homeless man's Devontae Parker.
Yeah, that's disrespectful to Devontae Parker to compare him to Sammy Watkins.
Devontae Parker's going to win some fantasy titles, too.
Great. Looking forward to it.
I can't wait.
He did great on my bench today.
Hey, what about Greg Rosenthal floated this? I like this idea. Devontae Parker for comeback player of the year award.
I mean, who's in second place?
He's not coming back from anything. He's just
playing. Yeah, he is. come back from being terrible for four straight years.
He's got the, oh my God. He hit the Jets, Giants, Bengals, and then in week 17, the Patriots, who won't care about anything.
That was an all timer.
He's going to go for 800. He's going to double up just in the Patriots game.
Dolphins are 0-7 through the first 7 weeks, 3-2 the last 5 weeks, averaging 24.6 points per game. Bengals 22, Jets 6. Congratulations, Zach Taylor. You've been dunked on with a big bath at Gatorade after you got your first win. Your first career win as a head coach came after Thanksgiving. And you started the season with the team, Andy Dalton, the top fantasy performer, 15 points. Bengals covered the plus 2.5, obviously, the under hit. Look, if you're Andy Dalton, how could you not be extremely excited about everything that's going on with Cincinnati?
You know, it's this is what we worked all offseason and all year for. I mean, obviously we've been in a tough situation this whole year and haven't found a way to win. And so, I mean, it's very rewarding to get this thing done today.
Yep, that's right. Worked all offseason and all year to beat the Jets, 22-6. The Jets became the first team in NFL history to lose to multiple teams who are 0-7 or worse in the same year. Incredible. They lost the 0-11 Dolphins, the 0-11 Bengals this week, and the 0-7 Dolphins a few weeks ago. excuse you, Ryan. This is
I hit the wrong mute button. My bad. I reverse muted it, like reverse tanking or reverse muted it.
So is that badly you cough every time you hit mute?
I have this dry cough. It's a whole thing. I apologize.
Tyler Boyd, 5 catches, 59 yards, and a touchdown. He looked finally active again in that game. Sam Darnold threw 48 times, and the Jets scored 6 points. I mean, I don't know, Breach. You tell me. Who should I be more impressed with? The Bengals were playing well, or should we just bury the Jets here?
Who they think going to beat them Bengals? This team is undefeated in the month of December. You never thought you'd be able to say that about the Cincinnati Bengals. If we threw out the rest of the season and only counted the standings for the final month, which is the most pivotal month in the NFL, they would be in a playoff race right now. But honestly, to answer your question, Brenton, the big concern here is the Jets. I think I read somewhere, and to go back to the article we talk about from the preseason all the time, that Adam Gase literally sleeps in his office to come up with game plans. Well, he topped that because apparently he skipped Thanksgiving with his family to come up with a game plan to beat the Bengals. This is what you skip Thanksgiving for? Like, was he shoving turkey in his mouth while coming up with his game plan? Was he rubbing pumpkin pie on his body like I was? Because this was the most atrocious performance I have ever seen from a team that looked hot. I mean, they were the last 3 weeks, they've scored 34 points in 3 straight games. Their offense was on a roll and they came out. This was just an absolute dud. I mean, last week we were talking about how we were shocked that the Jets were only a 3.5 point favorite. And, you know, I expected the Bengals to come out with some fire because Andy Dalton got his job back. You're going for your first win. So it's kind of like your Super Bowl. It's, we need to win right now. This is our best chance. It's a home game. But Adam Gase, it looked like these guys didn't practice all week. It's like he gave them the game plan 5 minutes before the game and said, all right, this is what we're running. And the thing is, the Jets couldn't stop anything the Bengals defense did. The Bengals were giving up more yards than any other team in the NFL this year. This should have been an easy 350-yard game for Sam Darnold, not a get sacked 4 times, only throw for 239 yards, and give up a safety game. So this was just, I mean, the Jets are a disaster. Brenton, you mentioned the crazy stat of losing to 2-0-7 teams or worse. So I would be more concerned with the Jets. For the Bengals, it's just to feel good. You still get the number one pick. You finish 1-15 or 2-14. You're happy.
Breach, who's the worst coach in your mind, Zach Taylor or Adam Gase?
I would rather have Zach Taylor. I said it. Can we go around the horn on that?
Easy.
Okay.
Adam Gase in his coaching career has a negative 319 point differential.
Again with the point differentials.
On average of a game he coaches in the NFL, he's getting outscored by more than 5 points per game. That is horrendous. Terrible.
Using that math, I would imagine Zach Taylor's point differential is worse per game.
I don't understand why you crap on point differential.
Well, that's all Sean brings up is point differential.
Well, it's very indicative of a coach who's not very good.
It's a cumulative measure of whether you're outscoring your opponents in a game where you.
I understand how it works. But if that's all Sean's going to say, we don't even need Sean here. We can just have a chart with point differentials of each team.
No, I'd add that up because they don't accumulate that. Oh,
all right, we need him to do the math. Okay, fair enough. Then that's why we need Sean.
Yeah, I mean, I would take Zach Taylor for the upside. I mean, like, I don't want Adam Gase.
What is the upside? Because the only reason, I think John would agree with this, that Andy Dalton got his job back is because the higher-ups didn't want to go 0-16. He was all set to stick with Ryan Finley.
You take Adam Gase?
I would think I would just rather not have a coach.
Well, that...
It's not, that's cheating. I would pick that option too, Ryan.
I would take, I mean, yes, I guess Zach Taylor because you like the lesser of the two evils. Something else I was thinking about though, watching this game.
I'd hire Adam Gase just so I could ask him about tacos. If he worked for me, he'd have to answer. I'd be like, tell me about the tacos, man.
But can we agree that we don't need 8 games a year, 2 years to tell if a coach is good? We can tell in about 2 or 3 games. Cause all these guys that we're still talking about after from the beginning of the season are terrible coaches, probably should get fired. Freddie Kitchens, Zach Taylor, Matt Patricia, who else is getting fired? Doug Marrone for years. I mean, he actually won some football games 2 years ago. Dan Quinn hasn't done a good job this year. But I feel like some of the new coaches, we see them after 2 or 3 games, like, okay, it's clear this guy's overmatched. And maybe we should get to the point where, all right, fire this guy in October and let's reset instead of waiting him out to where you have to, you know, take another year and a half to figure out the putting the team on the right path.
Hey, so what was the thing with Matt Rhule and the Jets, by the way?
He wanted to bring his own staff, I believe, and they said no, and he said, I'm out. That's my recollection. I could be wrong, but that's what I remember.
He said, I don't want to say anything about that job. At the end of the day, I'm never going to be in an arranged marriage. I'm never going to subcontract out jobs for offense and defense. I'm always going to hire people I believe in. They're going to do things our way. Matt Rhule's got, like, Baylor headed towards the pack, like the Big 12 championship. Like, imagine if they'd hired Matt. He's going to be a hot coaching candidate named this offseason. Imagine if they'd hired him instead of Adam Gase.
Well, I mean, who was up? Who else? Was anyone else up for the Browns job other than Greg Williams?
Well, he was getting a lot of offers, so you don't know if he was going to take that one.
Didn't Mike Sherman want it? Mike Sherman and Bruce Arians were both interested, but the Browns didn't contact either of them.
Imagine if Bruce Arians was coaching that Browns team.
My God, they'd be undefeated.
And let's also remember the Bengals couldn't hire a defensive coordinator. It took them months. Everyone kept saying no.
And that defense held the Jets to 6 points. That's more of an indictment on Adam Gase. Yeah. The team with no defensive coordinator just shut down the Jets. And I want to give a shout out to Andy Dalton because he set the Bengals franchise record for most touchdown passes, which I'm only noting because this team, not only did they bench him on his birthday, they benched him one touchdown pass short of breaking the team's franchise record, which just kind of sums up the whole entire organization.
Hey, Breach, how many touchdown passes were dropped today?
2. So he could have had, his numbers would have been better.
By the way, I want to go back through every snap, and I'm willing to do this. And all the drop passes, I'm counting this yardage towards Sean's tattoo because they should have been caught.
Sure. Ryan, if you want to put in the work of watching all those Bengals games instead of eating a jar of mayonnaise, go do it.
Ryan's all season is going to consist of watching Andy Dalton snaps, Sammy Watkins snaps. I found 300 hidden yards for Sammy.
Not a joke.
Redskins 29, Panthers 21. Ay, Ron Rivera. This is a bad, bad loss. The Panthers had 14-0 in the first 5 minutes of this game. I didn't score again until a garbage time touchdown later. Ron Rivera asked about it afterwards, said, I'm not worried about my future. I'm worried about this football team. We have a game coming up on Sunday. Darius Geis was awesome in this game. He ran the ball really well. Looked very healthy, like he's finally back from that injury. You know, towards ACL in the preseason last year and then had another knee thing. 10 carries, 129 yards. Adrian Peterson, 13 carries, 99 yards. So to be clear, the Carolina Panthers led 14-0 in the first quarter. The Redskins then proceeded to average 8.3 yards per carry for the entire game. How the hell is that even possible? Like, if you're up 14 points, the other team should be throwing. Darius Geis attempted 25 passes. Kyle Allen had more completions. How can you throw 46 times when you're up 14-0 in the first quarter? This is a humiliating effort for Ron Rivera's defense. I think it probably sealed his fate in Carolina, Ryan, and I think that we will be looking at a new Carolina Panthers coach this offseason.
Agreed. I feel like this loss is way more embarrassing than the Eagles going to Miami and losing. This is at home. The Redskins are a truly terrible offense. Like, the Dolphins can get hot. They have Devontae Parker. We all know that. So anything can happen with him out there. But Dwayne Haskins ain't playing great. He was 13 for 25. Didn't have any interceptions, but I guess it's a good thing. But I mean,
8.3 yards per carry.
Is that good?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Adrian Peterson had 99 yards on 13 carries. Adrian Peterson is a washed up old man, and I wouldn't dare say that to his face because he petrifies me. But, yeah, what do you think, Sean? Time to be done? For O'Rourke? Is Bill Callahan going to save his job?
I mean, the problem is that who do you – I mean, yes, I think he's gone because of the ownership situation, and I just think he will want to bring in his guy instead of riding with the guy he inherited. The question I always have is who's next? Josh, and they also have to figure out what are they doing with their quarterback situation. Are they bringing back Cam? Are they keeping Kyle Allen and drafting someone else? Or are they going to play Will Greer down the stretch? So, like – I understand why they'd move on from Ron Rivera, but there's a lot of hard questions they have to answer that lack easy answers. So
David Tepper, look at the analytics and realize he can unite the fan bases in North Carolina by signing Philip Rivers as a free agent and spawning one great final playoff run for Rivers.
This team is two games better than the Washington Redskins in the standings. That's how terrible they are.
They're last in the NFC South.
Our boss EK, by the way, was Googling Redskins playoff scenario, so.
No, he was not.
That's the state of the way he tweeted it.
That's bad. Redskins have won back-to-back games for the first time since last season when they won three games. 29 points is the most they've scored in a game since week three of 2018.
So that's coming together.
They still haven't won a home game in like – they're going to do the one they beat the Lions last week. That's right. Look, I don't know. I don't know. And by the way, the Panthers have lost four straight games. Kyle Allen didn't look terrible. You just can't have him thrown 46 times. So.
Well, the last play of the game was
a horrible
a microcosm of the whole game.
A horrible mess. Buccaneers, Jags. We'll have more to talk about Ron Rivera. That game, you don't need to know about that game. Buccaneers 28, Jags 11. The Bucs covered -3. The closes -3. They were my best bet of the week. The under 46.5 hit. That was the overs part of our parlay. I tweeted out that you should probably watch out for that and take the under instead because of weather conditions. It was very windy. In fact, Peyton Barber was a top fantasy performer. Bucks hammer the Jags, and Jameis Winston, Mike Evans do nothing. Minshew took over mid-game. Pete Prisco said, Minshew said, by the way, one thing I didn't appreciate is all the booing today. You got guys put their hearts out there every play, every game, and nobody deserves that. I hated how that was. Nick Foles called it not an easy game, a tough situation. It's a trial, and the trials keep coming. It's not easy, but I know where my heart is and where my faith is and what I'm going to lean on in this time. You never want to go through it. It's difficult, but you know what? I'm going to look at the bright side and keep my head held high. P.S. I have a Super Bowl ring. Suck it, losers. He didn't obviously say that. Are we done with Doug Marrone in Jacksonville breach?
Yes. You know what's funny is I think that Doug Marrone, or at least Tom Coughlin, every time Nick Foles threw a stupid pass today, which was almost every pass he threw in the game, I felt like that was one little nail being nailed into their coffin as people who are going to stay in Jacksonville. Because, look, they invested a lot of money in him, and this was rock bottom. This was the disaster that can get everyone fired. Nick Foles came out and – the Jaguars turned the ball over on their first three possessions. You had Nick Foles throw an interception on the opening possession. Okay, maybe he'll get better on the next possession, right? Nope. Strip sack, and the Bucs return it for a touchdown. So now all of a sudden it's 13-0 because the Bucs scored after Foles' interception. Nick Foles gets the ball back. You know what? Maybe he'll bring us back in the game. Nope. Strip sack again. Bucs recover it. That is three turnovers within the first quarter. Bucks scored after every single one. It was 22-0, and they should have just bench Foles after the first quarter and then cut him, give him a $60 million parting gift, and just roll with Minshew for the rest of the season. There's no reason to keep Marrone. There's no reason to keep Foles. Just go Minshew. You have nothing to lose. I don't care what the contract is.
Conversely, Ryan, we have Jameis Winston, Bruce Arians back in Tampa Bay now. Five games.
I mean, it certainly feels like it. I mean, the great irony with Jacksonville is that they spent all offseason trying not to get a young quarterback, and they bring in Nick Foles, he's going to get everyone fired. Juxtapose that with Jameis Winston, who seems to be sort of figuring things out as much as Jameis can figure something out in Bruce Arians' offense. Look, the team's won five games, and this team, the way he's played,
they're in second place in the NFC.
Yeah, I mean, if you watch Jameis' highlights, you're like, okay, this team hasn't won a game in 3 years. But they're somehow finding a way to do it. They drafted those guys on defense. I think Devin White, the rookie linebacker, scored a touchdown today. So, yeah, I feel like, again, what's plan B? Sean was talking about in terms of the coaching situation in Jacksonville. What's plan B after Jameis other than starting over. I mean, we saw plan B, the quarterback situation after Blake Bortles in Jacksonville, and that somehow turned out worse than Blake Bortles. So I feel like the only issue is, what are you going to have to pay Jameis to get him back?
By the way, first game for Jameis since 2017 where he did not throw a touchdown or an interception in a game. First time since 2016 the Bucs have won when Jameis did that. I think this is a situation where Jameis has to be willing to take a little bit less. You got to do some sort of bridge deal.
The Bears are going to pay him $35 million.
No, I was going to say, please go back to Tampa Bay. Please take less. So stay with Bruce Arians, please.
Their final four games, three are at home. They have Indianapolis at home, at Detroit, Houston at home, and at Atlanta. They could easily finish 9-7.
Not easily. They're 5-7. They can go 8-8. They're going to win out.
It wouldn't be shocking if they went out.
And they also had that crazy loss to the Giants, the 32-31, where Daniel Jones led that comeback. The loss we talk about every week where they got screwed over on the block field that was returned for a touchdown against the Titans. Like, this is a team that probably could have won 10 or 11 games if you literally changed two plays on the whole entire season. So I don't think Brinson's that crazy to say they could go 9-7.
Right, exactly.
But that's not going to get you anywhere near the playoffs in the NFC.
But if you go 9-7, you're 100% bringing everybody back, and James is getting a fat new contract.
Yeah, it's probably true.
What's a fat new contract, though?
$100 million over 4 years.
And free pumpkin pie.
You had him at pumpkin pie.
You mean crab legs?
You got to leave with pumpkin pie. You can't leave with $100 million.
I mean, what do you think he gets?
You think he's playing for $25 million a year? I don't.
Is that too low?
Yeah.
I think 30.
Yeah.
You think Jameis Winston is getting 30?
The yeah. Bears, Sean, I just told you what's going to happen.
I agree that might happen, and I'm boycotting the Bears as long as he's the Bears quarterback.
I think you're looking at a situation where, look, if they finish 9-7, it's a whole different ballgame. But if they finish 7-9 or 8-8, and Jameis is playing okay, and he's still young enough, I think that you could go to him and say, listen, here's the deal, Jameis. We are going to give you a Nick Foles, Alex Smith, Tom Brady type, Joe Flacco, Tom Brady doesn't make a lot of money. I mean, like, or you can get him for $25 million. Drew Brees is playing for $25 million.
All these guys you mentioned are old.
Derek Carr, his contract's $25 million per year. You think Jameis Winston is going to take less than Derek Carr? Or make less than Derek Carr? I don't think so. I don't.
Jimmy Garoppolo is $27.5 million. Jacoby is $27.9 million.
I can't live in a world where Jameis Winston's getting paid $30 million a year to throw 30 interceptions.
You got $1 million. You have choices to make then.
If they go 9-7, he's getting 30
too far.
They're going to give him $30 million a year if they get 9-7. That's just how it's
going
to
happen. They're not going 9-7, though. So
I just told you that. You just said it was $25 million. You just upped it $5 million a year.
He agreed with me.
If they go 9-7, it's 30. Might be 35.
Well, get out of here.
Don't worry. The Bears will bid him up to 40.
Is he going to take less than Jared Goff?
No, of course not.
You'd rather have Jared Goff or Jameis Winston?
Half a dozen of one. Who cares? I mean, you're losing either way.
Who would you rather have?
Jameis, I guess. I mean, I don't know.
I'll go with Goff.
Yeah, just who cares?
You don't pick Jameis.
And let's not forget, they could go 9-7 and get to the playoffs. Then Jameis is getting $50 million per year.
The Bucks aren't making the playoffs at 9-7.
Sean, they can. Whoever they're playing in Week 17 isn't going to show up. So he's going to go off in Week 17 anyway.
Every team gets an automatic win in Week 17.
They're playing the Falcons. They haven't shown up all season. Boom, dunked on.
I think they'll go 8-8 worst case. I think we're going to win three of those games.
That's what I said at the very beginning of this conversation.
And three of those four are at home.
I can't believe I'm looking up Buccaneers' schedule.
That's right.
I can't believe you guys. You're nervous about your new quarterback, Sean.
Are you kidding me? I want them to go 9-7, so I don't have to think about the Bears signing him.
Speaking of Jared Goff, he actually almost made a run at Norm Van Brocklin's all-time yardage record. Goff had a monster day and a big bounce-back spot. The Rams were on the road against the Cardinals, and after getting humiliated last week, they completely and utterly flexed on the Cardinals. I mean, flexed all over. 34-7 final. Jared Goff, 32 of 43, 424 passing yards, two touchdowns. Blake the Boat Bortles came in for a couple of throws.
Why is he the boat?
What's that?
He's the boat?
Yeah, instead of the goat.
Oh, I like that. The boat.
Pardon my take, guys, came up with that. Todd Gurley, 19 carries, 95 yards, one touchdown. Malcolm Brown ran six times. Robert Woods had 13 catches for 172 yards. Tyler Higbee blew up, seven catches, 170 yards and a touchdown. Cooper Kupp, 665 and one. Kyler Murray was not protected and not very good in this game, Sean.
Yeah, I think you can look at both teams, and it starts up front. And we talk about all the time how Jared Goff fares under pressure. I thought he was remarkably well-protected, only sacked one time. And if you look at a lot of the highlights, just not under pressure, had clean pockets. And that's the Jared Goff that we saw the first half of last year. Conversely, you look at the Cardinals. I had this game on my second TV, and I had Chiefs and Raiders on my other TV. Every time I looked at the Cardinals game, Kyler Murray is just running for his life in that backfield. He was sacked six times, and this is probably, I would say, the worst performance that I've seen him play, at least in recent weeks. But a lot of it you have to pin on his protection, and I don't think you got to panic or turn this into a big Kyler Murray long-term implications. He's been awesome. He had a bad game.
He had a hamstring, too.
Yes, and against an offensive line that was just overmatched against Aaron Donald. Aaron Donald, like, clotheslined him at one point. It was kind of embarrassing, ridiculous. And for Goff, we know the book on him. If he can get well protected and they can run their play action and they're crossing routes with Robert Woods and all that, he's going to be great. And if he's under siege, he's not going to be great. And this was the case of the Cardinals just not having a good pass rush or not having a good defense.
Still not going to the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't buy this as a, like, indicative of things to come. I think it's a one-game outburst.
Well, the problem with the Rams is that they beat up on bad teams. They lose to anybody that's got a decent defense, and they're 7-5. So, like, how are you going to possibly catch – I guess you catch Minnesota?
No, get out of here. Basically, the Cardinals thought it was Week 17. That's how they played.
Yeah.
The Rams, exactly.
Rams finished with Seattle – at Dallas, at San Francisco, and then Arizona at home. So good luck with
that. See, Week 17, Arizona. I knew it. They had the weeks wrong.
The Vikings have at Seattle, Detroit, L.A., Green Bay, and Chicago. Chicago won't show up in Week 17. I'll tell you that much.
Sean knows that they won't.
That's fine with me.
Listen, here's what's going to happen. Right before the game, Matt Nagy's going to say, listen, I know it's Week 17. We have nothing to play for. Next year, we're getting Jameis Winston. So go out there and play your hearts out. They're going to win that game.
Packers 31, Giants 13. The Packers cover 6.5. The over 43.5 hits. Aaron Rodgers had a huge game. We'll throw it to Breach, our noted weather correspondent. It was incredibly snowy. Rodgers said, I love the conditions. I admit I was a little worried that it might be more rain than snow. When those big flakes were falling down, I felt pretty good about our chances. We feel like we should win a game like that against that opponent. They've been struggling this season. You still have to go out and execute. They get paid too. There's a lot of pride on that football team, a lot of good players. It was important for us to get a good road victory in a game that you all expect us to win and that we expect to win. Rodgers, 21 to 33, 243 yards, four touchdowns. First game with four passing touchdowns, or multiple passing touchdowns since thanks. Rodgers joins Tony Romo and Drew Brees as the only player in the Super Bowl era with at least three career games of four passing touchdowns or more against the Giants. Davante Adams, six catches, 64 yards, and two touchdown passes. First time with multiple touchdown catches, since 2018. The Giants, Breach, are eliminated from the playoffs. What did you think about that winter wonderland?
I think that as soon as it started snowing, if I was live betting, I would have put everything on the Packers. Look, Aaron Rodgers, that's what he specializes in. I think before last season when the Packers fell apart at the end of the year, he was like 15-1 in December winter games. I think those were at home, but this was basically like playing at Lambeau Field because it was snowing so hard. I mean, the first quarter was snowing so hard that you couldn't see any green blades of grass on the field. It was completely white. Fox had to superimpose gray hash mark and yard line markers on the screen just so anyone at home could see what was going on. And, you know, Brinson, you mentioned how good Rodgers was. And the flip side of that was Daniel Jones, who probably has never played in snow in his life, or if he has, probably only once or twice, looked bad. He threw three interceptions, and that was the story of the game. You put people in snow who aren't used to playing in snow, and they struggle.
By the way, I'll point this out. Miami was tanking for much of the season. They got rid of everyone. Redskins are an absolute hot mess. The Giants are somehow worse than both those teams. They only have two wins. They had three first-round picks last year. They traded Odell Beckham, and in exchange, they got Dexter Lawrence and Jabril Peppers. Then they took DeAndre Baker at the end of the first round. This team sucks. Pat Shermer's getting fired. He's worse than McAdoo ever was, and that's saying something. McAdoo actually took that team to the playoffs. I don't know where the Giants go from here.
Maybe you would you. What if you bring McAdoo back?
And you bring Jason Garrett with him.
Oh, my God. Do we talk about this in the podcast yet? If they hire Jason Garrett, it's the greatest thing in the entire
world. I will only listen to Nick Costas from now on if they hire Jason Garrett as a Cowboys coach.
Would you rather have McAdoo in your life again, or would you rather have Jason Garrett?
Jameis Winston. I mean, come on.
It's Jameis Winston to Chicago, Jason Garrett to the Giants this offseason, and it is a dance party for this podcast. I'll tell you that.
The Bears are big winners.
If you're the Giants, though, this is the one year that sucking this bad is actually good, because if they end up with a number one overall pick, you have two options. You take Chase Young, fantastic. You need somebody on that's that good on the defensive side of the ball, or you have everyone who needs a quarterback trying to get Joe Burrow, and so all of a sudden they're just going to be making crazy trade offers and throw them in your face. And then you trade down and get a bunch of picks. So, you know, if there is one year to suck and you, cause they're the only team up that high that doesn't really need a quarterback, then Giants, maybe this was their plan all along, guys. Maybe they were the team that was actually tanking, not the Dolphins.
The Giants had the Eagles twice, the Dolphins and the Redskins. So if they lose out and finish with 2-14, Pat Shermer's getting fired.
Did you see, by the way, Pat Shermer at the end of the game, they asked about Daniel Jones' three interceptions and his response was, well, they weren't fumbles, or paraphrasing, because Daniel Jones has, like, the fumbling problems. Like, if he had been playing over the course of the year, he'd be, I think, on pace to break the all-time single-season fumble record. That makes no sense to me. A turnover is a turnover. And, by the way, Daniel Jones, who threw three interceptions, fumbled once. So,
Sean, you're glossing over the fact that Brenton said if they lose out, Shermer's getting fired. If they win out, Shermer's getting fired. He's done.
You think so?
I don't know. If he beats the Eagles twice, that might be enough to save his job.
Are you serious?
Yeah, NFC East, you beat the NFC East rival twice. That's how those guys operate in New York. Oh, we didn't make the playoffs or even win five games. We beat the Eagles twice. You're staying, Pat.
Two Super Bowls since 2007.
Yeah, that's a. I think they've gone downhill.
Have to look like idiots and fire him.
Let me put it to you this way: if they fire him, no one's going to be rushing to hire him, no matter what their record is at the end of the season.
It's kind of funny, his career arc, too. The only reason he got this job is it's like the most fluky turn of events that Case Keenum somehow put together this, like, semi-MVP-esque year, and that's what got Pat Shermer this job. Like, that's literally the only reason he has this job is because Case Keenum played out of his mind for a little bit over a year, or a little bit less than a year.
Ooh, fun fact. Today was John Mara's birthday.
Ugh. Well, I wonder if he'll fire him as a birthday present to himself.
Right after he finishes that pumpkin pie.
Oh wait, here's this could be good. This is Pat Shermer talking after the game.
I'm always concerned when we don't win, right? And this is another feeling question, you know. And you know, I'll feel better when we win games. That's if you're wondering how I feel. I feel a lot better when we win games, and. You know, I do see, you know, you get an opportunity to watch us probably 20 minutes a day and you report on it. And this is a historically young team that's going out there and competing against some really good football teams. And we've got to do what we have to do to win games. And I understand that. But they also are developing. And at some point, we'll be good enough to win.
At some point, we'll be good enough to win.
When people make excuses about anything personnel-wise, I keep coming back to the Steelers started a practice squad offense with Duck Hodges, who is shorter than Breach. So,
are you assaulting me or Duck?
Duck.
I think both. Okay.
But my point is that, I mean, listen, this is the NFL. Don't make excuses. You put together this roster along with Dave Gettleman. You guys are terrible. So it doesn't matter if they're young or old or whatever. Find a way to win some football games.
Do you know what, without looking, Pat Shermer's record is now?
How many years has he been in New York?
No, I'm talking about as an NFL head coach. Remember, he also had another stint before.
He has won. He has to have won 42% of his games.
Okay.
42?
Is that too high? That is too high, isn't it?
It's
that's insanely high. They're 2-10 right now.
Well, he's been coaching for a while.
He is now 17-44.
What's the math on that? Yeah, I was gonna say
under 28%.
Is it?
It's he's at 28.3% coming to this game. 17.
Who was worse than that?
Hugh Jackson.
Okay. Hopefully.
And Sean was saying he doesn't think Pat Shurmur could get a job anywhere else. The Giants apparently specialize in that because since 1991, they've only had one coach that went on after they got rid of them to get another head coaching job. No one else has been a head coach again in the NFL.
Where is McAdoo right now?
Not a head coach.
I assume he's asleep.
He's probably walking his dog.
Cashing his checks.
Who knows what he's doing? Okay, yeah. No, wait, he has to have a job somewhere, right?
I don't think he does.
Harry gonna come?
He doesn't.
He's just some unemployed goober with a bad haircut?
Who has a better career record than Pat Shurmur?
Yeah, he would have to. Bernie Lomax has a better coaching record than Pat Shurmur.
Rich Kotite.
He won 11 games in 2000. Pat Shurmur.
He was fired after a 2-10 start to the 2017 season, which is Pat Shurmur's record right now this year.
McAdoo had 11 wins his first year with the Giants. Pat Shurmur has 17 wins in 5 years as a head coach.
Is that good?
No, it's not. All right, see ya. Bye, fire. Broncos 23. Chargers 20.
Best for last. And by the way, Brinson, I don't know if you noticed, but I beat you because Philip Rivers refused to throw the ball to Keenan Allen down the stretch.
You hate to see it.
Yeah, I hate to see it.
I think you beat me pretty easily without that.
Oh, no, that eliminates Brinson from the playoffs, too.
You got bounced.
Oh, no.
You beat me by 2 points. You have Tyler Lockett left. What are you talking about?
This is what Ryan does. And, by the way, if you were winning by 3 points, say Keenan Allen got 40 more yards, he would have DM'd all of us before Monday Night Football asking, So what do you think my chances are I'm going to win? He does this every – he did it to me, too, when he was down by four with Tyler Lockett.
Yeah. If I'd started Curtis Samuel over A.J. Brown, I would have had a chance, but I took a flyer.
But that's not the story. The story is that Philip Rivers – is not good.
Yeah. Philip Rivers is our top fantasy performer in this game with 20 points. The Broncos obviously won and covered the +4.5. The over of 38 hit. It hit because the Chargers went down the field, got a field goal tight, 20 all, with 14 seconds left, and somehow lost in regulation. They did so. Anthony Lynn points out officials are not perfect, but I did not like that call at the end of the game. I don't think that's the way you end a football game. To make that call, it'd have to be clear and obvious. To be clear, Drew Locke threw the ball down the field to Cortland Sutton. A Chargers guy ran into him. The ref,
Casey Hayward.
Casey Hayward hits him. A Chargers guy the official whips out the yellow flag, gets in the range. Brandon McManus walks in. And bangs down a field goal. It was a perfectly Chargers ending. They fall to 4-7, somehow not eliminated from the playoffs, but they are by all intents and purposes. They have to be the most disappointing. Like, the Steelers are the most surprising team this year, given how things have gone. The Chargers have to be the most disappointing.
I will say this. Phillip Rivers threw one interception, but they're right. That PI at the end was borderline terrible. I mean, it looked like the official had the flag in his hand before the ball was even thrown, before Drew Locke even threw it up in the air. I do love that James Lawson's like, you have to take a knee here no matter what. And I'm thinking, just throw a bomb and see what happens. And that's exactly what happened. PI, field goal, game over. The thing is, that wasn't the worst call of the day, of the week. I mean, it was a bad call, but in the scheme of things, it's right there with the rest of them.
Rivers wasn't that bad in this game.
Can we talk about the most important storyline this game was Brandon McManus, the Broncos kicker, was ready to fight Vic Fangio. Whenever you ever seen a kicker head coach who gets so crazy that looked like the kicker was ready to punch his head coach in the face right before halftime, the Broncos had the ball and McManus, this is in Denver where you can kick about 5-6 yards further than you usually can. Denver drove to the Chargers 47-yard line, which would have been about a 66-yard field goal, and he wanted to try it. And you know what? McManus ended up hitting the game-winning field goal on the final play of the game. It was a 53-yard field goal. I would have taken that ball, and he should have just gone up and chucked it at Fangio and said, I told you, man, something like that. But anyway, Fangio was McVanis was probably the second best fantasy guy in this game because he scored 15 points, Brinson, with three field goals, two of them over 50 yards. And, yeah, that was my favorite part of the game was the kicker almost fighting the head coach.
It was delightful. Well, Ryan, what did you think about Drew Lock?
Hey, he got out there, a couple of nice passes to Courtland Sutton. Courtland Sutton's balling out. He made a few mistakes at the end there. I was okay with – at least you got to get him out there, and I suspect we'll be having the same conversation about your boy Will Grier in the coming weeks in Carolina. But, yeah, put him out there, see what you have. And is Brandon Allen hurt, or did they just put him on the bench?
Yeah, they just wanted to try Drew Lock out.
Good. Yeah, he was off IR. He's out there. He'd keep him out there. He seemed quite happy for finally being able to play, and, you know, good for him.
Did y'all see that Anthony Lynn feature before the game? Did you see Rex Ryan cry on TV?
No. Did Anthony Lynn have his shoes off?
No. He's like building, like he's helping like build, like in I think over in Africa, he's helping like build schools and stuff like that. They did a feature on it. And Rex, they got over there and they're like, Rex, what do you think? He's just like, and like starts sobbing. It was like, that's why he's great. I know him for 8 years. It was like, it's very uncomfortable. I don't ever want to see Rex Ryan cry.
Well, that's awesome for Anthony Lynn. By the way, you guys probably heard this, but we didn't mention it earlier. Warwick Dunn's been making building houses for people and giving away for free for years now, since he's retired. Over like 150, well over that. I think house number 60 something went to Deshaun Watson and his mom.
That's cool.
You just
yeah, 100%.
You just found that out.
No, they were talking about it on the telecast.
Yeah, everyone knows that.
Okay, well, we didn't mention it during the show, and you talk about Anthony Lynn. I thought I'd add that for people that didn't know it.
Wait, Ryan, do you have a soundbite to play for it though?
Thanks, Sean. Trying to spread goodwill, and Oscar over here is crapping all over me.
You don't like sound bites, Sean?
I like the silent sound bite the best. Can you play that one again?
No, I like hanging Ryan on about it because it drives him crazy.
Well, people are driving down the road, they hear silence, like, oh, the thing must have gone out. They turn off the friggin' podcast.
I doubt they're going to do that. They're not turning it off because it's Sean's little electronic farts. They're not going to turn it off.
They're not mine, man. They were happening before I was even on this podcast when I was listening.
Likely story.
Anyway, Phil, 58 yards. Lock, 134, 18 of 28. Rivers, 20 of 29.
By the way, Rivers wasn't great. There was conversations about benching for Tyrod Taylor halfway through that game.
No, that's because Ian Rappaport reported it before that they were talking about doing it. But, I mean, he wasn't great, but he wasn't the problem with the Chargers.
Fair enough.
They were getting carded up by Drew Lock.
It happens.
It does happen. All right. Anything else from these games or anything else that happened in Sunday's action? Nope. Good to go. All right. We'll be back. Make sure and check out your feed. Should be a Jason Lock and Fora podcast coming this afternoon. We'll also do a preview. We have the preview podcast with Dubin, Jared Dubin and Jason Lock and Fora. And then we'll have a Monday night recap. Talk to you fools later.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.